This completes phase one, which is, in my opinion, the most important phase. Money is just an idea. If you think money is hard to get and you'll never be rich, then it will be true for you. If you think that money is abundant, then that can be true also. The remaining four phases cover the specifics of Rich Dad's plan and how they were similar to the plans of some of the richest people in the world. As you listen, consider how Rich Dad's plan conflicts, adds to, subtracts from, or agrees with your personal financial plan. I caution you to use the information provided as a guide and not as hard data. Much of it is subject to legal interpretation and should be evaluated based on your individual circumstances. Its application is not always black and white and should be carefully reviewed. We advise you to consult with your legal and financial advisors to make sure you develop the plan most appropriate for your needs and goals. Chapter 19, The 90-10 Riddle. I was working with a group of very bright graduate students at Thunderbird School of Global Management. During the three-hour session, I asked one of the young students, "What is your investment plan?" Without hesitation, he replied, "When I graduate, I will find a job that pays me at least $150,000 a year and will put aside at least $20,000 a year to buy investments." I thanked him for his willingness to share his plan with me. Then I said, "Do you remember my discussion of Rich Dad's 90-10 principle of money?" "Yes," said the young man with a smile, knowing that I was about to challenge the way he was thinking. He was enrolled in the entrepreneurship program of this very prestigious school where I was a guest instructor. By now, he knew that my style of teaching is not to give students answers. My style is to challenge core beliefs and ask students to evaluate old thought patterns. "What does the 90-10 principle of money have to do with my investment plan?" he asked cautiously. "Everything," I replied. "Do you think your plan of finding a job and investing at least $20,000 a year will put you in the category of the 10% of investors who make 90% of the money?" "I don't know," he replied. "I never really thought about my plan with that benchmark in mind." "Most people don't," I replied. "Most people find an investment plan and think it is the only investment plan or the best investment plan. But few compare their plans to other plans. And the problem is that most people will not find out if their plan was the right plan until it's too late." "You mean the average investor is investing for retirement and will not find out if their plan worked or not until they retire?" asked another student in the class. "They'll find out when it is too late?" "For many people my age, that will be true," I replied. "Sad, but true." "But isn't the idea of finding a high-paying job and putting $20,000 a year away a pretty good plan?" asked the student. "After all, I'm only 26 years old." "A very good plan," I replied. "Definitely putting away more money than the average person and starting young with that much money will probably make you a very rich man. But my question is, will your plan put you in the 90-10 league of investors?" "I don't know," said the young man. "What would you advise?" "Do you remember my telling you the story of walking along the beach with my rich dad at the age of 12?" I asked. "You mean the story of you wondering how he could afford such an expensive piece of real estate?" another student replied. "Rich Dad's first big investment and his first move into the world of bigger investments?" I nodded my head and replied, "That's the story." "And that story has to do with the 90-10 rule of money?" asked the student. "Yes, it does. It applies because I always wondered how my rich dad could acquire an asset so big even though he had very little. So, after asking him how he did it, he gave me what he called the 90-10 riddle." "The 90-10 riddle?" replied one of the students. "What is the 90-10 riddle and what does it have to do with my investment plan?" With that question, I walked to the chalkboard and drew a diagram. "This is the 90-10 riddle," I said. "That's the 90-10 riddle?" asked the student. "All it looks like is a financial statement without any assets in it." "And it is. So, this is the question that completes the riddle," I said with a grin, watching the students' faces to see if they were still with me. After a long pause on my part, one of the students finally demanded, "So, give us the question." "The question is," I said slowly, "how do you fill your asset column without buying any assets?" "Without buying any assets?" asked the student. "You mean without any money?" "More or less," I replied. "Your investment plan for putting $20,000 a year aside to invest is a good idea. But my challenge to you is the idea of buying assets with money a 90-10 idea, or is it an average investor idea? So you're saying to create assets in the asset column instead of buying the assets with money, which is what most people do." I nodded my head. "You see, this diagram, the diagram I call the 90-10 riddle, is the riddle that my rich dad would challenge me with on a regular basis. He would ask me for my ideas on how I could create assets in the asset column without buying them with money." The students were silent, looking at the riddle on the chalkboard. Finally, one student turned and said, "Is that why you often say it doesn't take money to make money?" I nodded my head and replied, "You're catching on. Most people in the 90% who own the 10% often say it takes money to make money. Many often give up on investing if they do not have any money. So your rich dad's 90-10 riddle was to give you a blank asset column and ask you how you would fill it with assets without having to buy the assets. Constantly. After I came back from Vietnam, he would routinely have a lunch or dinner with me and ask me for new ideas on how to fill the asset column by creating assets instead of buying assets. He knew that this is how many of the ultra-rich got rich in the first place. That is how Bill Gates, Michael Dell, and Richard Branson all became billionaires. They did not become billionaires by looking for a job and putting a few dollars aside. So you're saying the way to become rich is by being an entrepreneur? No, I am not saying that. I just use those examples because you are all in the entrepreneurship program at Thunderbird. The Beatles became ultra-rich by creating a different kind of asset, but they created assets that still produce money today. All I am saying is that Rich Dad put this financial statement with a blank asset column in front of me on a regular basis and asked me how I would create assets inside the asset column without having to spend money to acquire them. He began giving me this 90-10 quiz when I asked him how he found the power to acquire a piece of the most expensive beachfront land without any money. "So he said his business bought the land," another student chimed in. "As I said, that is one way, but there are many ways you can create assets inside an asset column without buying them. Inventors do it by inventing something of great value. Artists paint paintings that are priceless. Authors write books that pay them royalties for years. Creating a business is the way an entrepreneur does it, but you don't have to be an entrepreneur to create an asset inside the asset column. I've done it with real estate without using any money. All you have to do is be creative, and you can be rich for life." "You mean I can invent something with new technology and become rich?" asked one of the students. "You could, but it does not have to be an invention or new technology," I said, pausing for a while. "It is a way of thinking that creates assets. Once you have that way of thinking, you will be richer than you ever dreamed possible." "What do you mean it doesn't have to be a new invention or technology? What else could it be?" Doing my best to make my point, I asked, "Do you remember the story about the comic books in my book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad?" Yes, said one of the students, the story of your rich dad taking away your 10 cents an hour and asking you to work for free after you asked for a raise. He took away the 10 cents because he did not want you to spend your life working for money. Yes, that story, I replied. That is a story about filling the asset column with an asset without buying the asset. The students stood quietly for a while, thinking about what I had just said. Finally, one spoke up and said, "So you took old comic books and turned them into assets?" I nodded my head. "But were the comic books the asset?" I asked. "Not until you turned them into an asset," replied another student. "You took something that was being thrown out as trash and turned it into an asset." "Yes, but were the comic books the asset, or were the comic books merely the part of the asset you could see?" "Oh," another one of the students jumped in, "it was the invisible thought process that took the comic book and created an asset out of it. The thought process was the real asset." That is how my rich dad saw it. He later told me that the power he had was his thinking process. It was a thinking process that he often jokingly called turning trash into cash. He also said most people do exactly the opposite and turn cash into trash. That is why the 90-10 rule holds true. He was like the ancient alchemists, said one of the students, the alchemists who searched for the formula to turn lead into gold. Exactly, I said. The people who are in the 90-10 grouping of money are modern-day alchemists. The only difference is that they are able to turn nothing into assets. Their power is the ability to take ideas and turn them into assets. But as you say, many people have great ideas. They are just not able to convert them into assets, said a student. I nodded my head. And that was my rich dad's secret power that I saw that day on the beach. It was that mental power or financial intelligence that allowed him to acquire such an expensive piece of real estate, while the average investor would walk away from it, saying, "I can't afford it," or "It takes money to make money." "How often did he give you the 90-10 quiz?" asked a student. "Very often," I replied. "It was his way of exercising my brain. Rich Dad often said that our brains are our most powerful asset, and, if used improperly, they can be our most powerful liability." The students were silent. I assume they were contemplating and questioning their own thoughts. Finally, the original student, the student whose plan it was to put the $20,000 a year away, said, "So that is why in your book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, one of Rich Dad's lessons was that the rich invent their own money." I nodded my head and said, "And lesson number one of the 6 lessons was, the rich don't work for money." Again, there was silence from the young students before one said, "So while we are planning on getting a job and saving money to buy assets, you were taught that your job was to create assets." "Well said," I replied. "You see, the idea of a job was created in the industrial age, and ever since 1989, we have been in the information age." "What do you mean the idea of a job is an industrial age idea?" one student asked with a start. "Humans have always had jobs, haven't they?" "No, at least not in the way we know a job today. You see, in the hunter-gatherer period of humanity, humans lived in tribes, and each person's job was to contribute to the communal survival of the tribe. In other words, it was all for one and one for all. Then came the agrarian age, the era when there were kings and queens. A person's job during that period was to be a serf or a peasant who paid the king to work the land the king owned. Then came the industrial age, and serfdom or slavery was abolished, and human beings began selling their labor on the open market. Most people became employees or self-employed, doing their best to sell their labor to the highest bidder. That is the modern concept of the word job. So the moment I said I'm going to get a job and put $20,000 away a year, you see that kind of thinking as industrial age thinking. I nodded my head. Just as today there are still agrarian age workers who are known as farmers and ranchers. Today there are still hunter-gatherers, commercial fishermen, for example. Most people are working with industrial age ideas, and that is why so many people have jobs. So what would an information age idea of work be? Asked a student. People who do not work because their ideas are at work. Today, there are students who are much like my rich dad who are going from school to becoming rich without a job. Look at many of the internet billionaires. Some of them dropped out of college to become billionaires without ever having a formal job. In other words, they started with an empty asset column and filled it with a very big asset, an information age asset, added one of the students. Many built multi-billion dollar assets, I said. They went from students to billionaires. Soon, there will be high school students who will go from high school students to billionaires without ever applying for a job. I already know of one who is a millionaire without ever having a job. After reading my book and playing my games, he bought a large piece of real estate, sold off a section of vacant land, kept the apartment house, and paid off his loan with the money from the land. He now owns the apartment house, which is worth a little over $1 million, and has a cash flow of $4,000 a month income without working. He will graduate from high school in about a year. The students stood silently again, thinking about what I had just said. Some had a hard time believing my story about the high school student, yet they knew the story of college dropouts becoming billionaires was true. Finally, one spoke up. So, in the information age, people are getting rich with information. Not just in the information age, I replied. It has been this way throughout the ages. It is the people who do not have assets who work for or are controlled by those people who create, acquire, or control the assets. So you're saying a high school kid could beat me financially, even though he does not have a great education from a prestigious school or a high-paying job, said the first student. That is exactly what I'm saying. It's more about the way you think than about your education. Best-selling author Thomas Stanley states in his book, The Millionaire Mind, that his research found no correlation between high SAT scores, good grades, and money. The student with the $20,000 a year investment plan then said, "So if I want to join the 90-10 Investor Club, I am better off to practice creating assets instead of buying assets. I should acquire assets by being creative rather than by doing what everyone else does." That is why billionaire Henry Ford said, "Thinking is the hardest work there is." That is why so few people engage in it, I replied. It also explains why, if you do what the 90% of investors do, you will join them in sharing only 10% of the wealth. Or why Einstein said, "Imagination is more important than knowledge," added another student. Or why my rich dad gave me this tip when hiring an accountant. He said that when you're interviewing an accountant, ask him or her, "What is 1 + 1? If the accountant answers 3, don't hire the person. They're not smart. If the accountant answers 2, you also don't hire them because they are not smart enough. But if the accountant answers, "What do you want 1 + 1 to be?" you hire them immediately. The students laughed as we began packing up our materials. "So you create assets that buy other assets and liabilities, is that correct?" asked a student. I nodded my head. "Do you ever use money to buy other assets?" asked the same student. "Yes, but I like to use the money generated by the asset I create to buy other assets," I replied, picking up my briefcase. "Remember that I don't like working for money. I'd rather create assets that buy other assets and liabilities." A young student from China gave me a hand with my bags and said, And is that why you recommend network marketing so much? For very little money and risk, a person can build an asset in their spare time. I nodded my head. An asset they can pass on to their kids if their kids want it. I don't know of too many companies that will let you pass on your job to your kids. That is one test of an asset. You can hand it on down to the people you love. My dad, the man I call my poor dad, worked very hard to climb the government ladder. Even if he had not been fired, he would not have been able to pass on his years of hard work to his kids. Not that any of us wanted the job or were qualified to take the job anyway. The students gave me a hand out to my car. So think about creating assets rather than working hard and buying assets, said the $20,000 student. If you want to get into the 90-10 Investor Club, I replied. That is why my rich dad constantly challenged my creativity to create different types of assets in the asset column without buying them. He said it was better to work years at creating an asset rather than to spend your life working hard for money to create someone else's asset. As I climbed into my car, the $20,000 student then said, "So all I have to do is take an idea and create an asset, a big asset that makes me rich. If I do that, I will solve the 90-10 riddle and join the 10% of all investors who control 90% of the wealth." Laughing, I pulled my door shut and replied to his last comment. If you solve the 90-10 riddle in real life, you will have a good chance of joining the 10% that control 90% of the money. If you don't solve the 90-10 riddle in real life, you will probably join the 90% that control just 10% of the money. I thanked the students and drove away. Mental Attitude Quiz. As Henry Ford said, thinking is the hardest work there is. That is why so few people engage in it. Or, as my rich dad said, your brain can be your most powerful asset. But if not used properly, it can be your most powerful liability. My rich dad had me repeatedly create new assets in an empty asset column. He would sit down with his son and me and ask us how we could create a new and different asset. He really did not care if the idea was crazy. He just wanted us to be able to substantiate how our idea could be turned into an asset. He would ask us to defend our thoughts and challenge his challenges. In the long run, it was a lot better than him telling us to work hard, save money, and live below our means, which was what my poor dad recommended. So, the mental attitude quiz question is, are you willing to consider creating your own assets rather than buying them? There are many books and educational programs written on how to buy assets wisely. For most people, buying assets is the best plan for them. I would also recommend that you buy assets for the secure and comfortable levels of your investment plan. Invest in such assets as blue chip stocks for the secure and comfortable level. But if you have dreams of becoming a very rich investor, the question is, are you willing to create your assets rather than buy someone else's assets? If not, then, as I said, there are many books and educational programs about how to purchase assets. If you are willing to consider how to create assets, then the remainder of this audiobook will be valuable, maybe priceless. It is about how to take an idea and turn it into an asset that will acquire other assets. It is not only about how to make a lot of money in the asset column. It is also about how to keep the money that asset makes and have it acquire even more assets, as well as the luxuries of life. It reveals how many of the 10% came to acquire 90% of the money. So, if this is of interest to you, then please continue listening. Again, this is the 90-10 riddle. How do you create an asset in the asset column without spending money to acquire it? The smart way to keep your money. My first big business was the nylon and Velcro surfer wallet business in 1977. It was created as a very big asset in the asset column. The problem was that the size of the created asset was big, but my business skills were small. So, while I was technically a millionaire in my 20s, I also lost it all in my 20s. I repeated the same process 3 years later in the rock and roll business. When MTV hit, our little company was in the perfect position to capitalize on the craze. Again, the asset created was bigger than the people who created it. We went up like a rocket ship and came down like a rocket ship without gas. The rest of this audiobook is dedicated to creating big assets, having the professional talent to match the size of the asset, and keeping the money made by investing in other, often more stable, assets. As my rich dad said, what good is making a lot of money if you don't keep it? Investing is the way smart people keep their money. Phase 2. What type of investor do you want to become? Chapter 20. Solving the 90-10 Riddle. My rich dad said, there are investors who buy assets, and there are investors who create assets. If you want to solve the 90-10 riddle for yourself, you need to be both types of investors. In the introduction, I told the story of Rich Dad walking along a beach with Mike and me, looking at a very expensive piece of beachfront real estate he had just purchased. You may recall that I asked Rich Dad how he could afford such an expensive piece of real estate when my poor dad could not. Rich Dad's reply was, I can't afford to buy this land either, but my business can. All I could see was a piece of land with old abandoned cars, an old building falling down, lots of brush and debris, and a large for sale sign sticking up from the middle of the property. At the age of 12, I could not see any business on this land, but my rich dad could. The business was being created in his head. That ability to create businesses in his head was the reason he would go on to be one of the richest men in Hawaii. In other words, Rich Dad solved his 90-10 riddle by creating assets that in turn purchased other assets. That plan was not only Rich Dad's investment plan. It is the investment plan for most of the 10% who make 90% of the money, in the past, in the present, and into the future. For those of you who read or listened to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you may recall the story of Ray Kroc saying to my friend's MBA class that McDonald's, the company he founded, was not in the business of hamburgers. Their business was the business of real estate. Again, the formula is to create an asset that buys other assets. That formula is the reason why McDonald's owns the most expensive real estate in the world. It was all part of the plan. And that is why Rich Dad repeatedly said to me, once he knew I was serious about becoming rich, if you want to solve the 90-10 riddle for yourself, you need to be both types of investors. You need to be a person who knows how to create assets, as well as a person who knows how to buy assets. The average investor is not generally aware of the different processes and is not good at either process of investing. The average investor usually does not even have a formally written plan. Making millions, maybe billions, from your ideas. Much of the second half of this audiobook is about how people create assets. Rich Dad spent many hours with me teaching me the process of how a person takes an idea and turns it into a business that creates assets that buy other assets. During one of these lessons with Rich Dad, he said, many people have ideas that could make them rich beyond their wildest dreams. The problem is that most people have never been taught how to put a business structure inside their ideas, and so many of their ideas never take shape or stand on their own. If you want to be one of the 10% who make 90% of the money, you will need to know how to build a business structure inside your creative ideas. Much of the second half of this audiobook is about what Rich Dad called the BI triangle, which is the mental structure that can give life to your financial ideas. It is the power of the BI triangle that takes an idea and turns it into an asset. Rich Dad often said, more than just knowing how to create assets that buy assets, one of the main reasons the richest of investors are able to become richer is that they know how to turn their ideas into millions and maybe even billions of dollars. The average investor may have excellent ideas, but they often lack the skills to turn their ideas into assets that buy assets. The remainder of this audiobook is dedicated to how ordinary people are able to turn their ideas into assets that buy assets. You can't do that. While teaching me how to turn my ideas into assets, Rich Dad often said, "When you first set out to turn your ideas into your personal fortune, many people will say, 'You can't do that.' Always remember that nothing kills your great ideas more than people with small ideas and limited imaginations." Rich Dad gave me two reasons he thought people tended to say, "You can't do that." One, they say, "You can't do that," even if you are doing what they say you cannot do, not because you can't do it, but because they can't do it. Two, they say, "You can't do it," because they cannot see what you are doing. Rich Dad explained that the process of making a lot of money is a mental process more than a physical process. One of Rich Dad's favorite quotes came from Einstein. "Great spirits have always encountered violent opposition from mediocre minds." Commenting on Einstein's quote, Rich Dad said, "We all possess both a great spirit and a mediocre mind. The challenge in turning our ideas into a $1 million or even a $1 billion asset is often the battle between our own great spirits and our own often mediocre minds." When I explain the BI triangle, which is the business structure that gives life to business ideas and is explained in this part of this audiobook, some people become overwhelmed by the amount of knowledge required to make the BI triangle work for them. When that happens, I often remind them of the battle between their great spirits and mediocre minds. Whenever a person's mediocre mind begins to oppose their own great spirits, I always remind them of what my Rich Dad said to me. He said, "There are many people with great ideas, but very few people with great amounts of money." The reason the 90-10 rule holds true is that it does not take a great idea to become rich, but it does take a great person behind the idea to become rich. You must be of strong spirit and strong in your convictions to turn your ideas into fortunes. Even if you understand the process via which your ideas can become millions or even billions of dollars, always remember that great ideas only become great fortunes if the person behind the idea is also willing to be great. It is often difficult to keep going when everyone around you is saying you can't do it. You must have a very strong spirit to withstand the doubt of those around you. But your spirit must be even stronger when you are the person saying to yourself, "You can't do that." This does not mean that you plow blindly on, not listening to the good and bad ideas of your friends or yourself. Their thoughts and input should be listened to and often used when their ideas are better than yours. But at this moment, I am not talking to you about mere ideas or advice. What I am talking to you about is more than just ideas. I am talking about your spirit and the will to go on even when filled with doubt and when you're out of good ideas. No one can tell you what you can or cannot do in your life. Only you can determine that. Your own greatness is often found at the end of the road. And when it comes to turning your ideas into money, there are many times when you come to the end of the road. The end of the road is when you are out of ideas, out of money, and filled with doubt. If you can find in yourself the spirit to go on, you will find out what it really takes to turn your ideas into great assets. Turning an idea into a great fortune is more a matter of human spirit rather than a matter of the human mind. At the end of every road, the entrepreneur finds his or her spirit. Finding your entrepreneurial spirit and making it strong are more important than the idea or business you are developing. Once you find your entrepreneurial spirit, you will forever be able to take very ordinary ideas and turn them into extraordinary fortunes. Always remember that the world is filled with people with great ideas, but very few people with great fortunes. The remainder of this audiobook is dedicated to your finding your entrepreneurial spirit and developing your ability to turn ordinary ideas into extraordinary fortunes. Phase 2 gives you insight into Rich Dad's different types of investors and allows you to choose the path that may be best for you. Phase 3 analyzes Rich Dad's BI triangle and how it can provide the structure for you to make an asset out of your idea. Phase 4 goes into the mind of sophisticated investors and how they analyze investments. It also looks at the pathway of ultimate investors who take their ideas and the BI triangle and create fortunes. The last phase, Phase 5, talks about the importance of giving back. Chapter 21, Categories of Investors. This audiobook is an educational story about Rich Dad guiding me from having no money and no job when I left the Marines to well down my path to becoming the ultimate investor, a person who becomes a selling shareholder rather than a buying shareholder, a person who was on the inside of the investment rather than on the outside. Other investment vehicles in which the rich invest that the poor and middle class do not include initial public offerings of stock, IPOs, private placements, and other corporate securities. Whether you are on the inside of an investment or on the outside, it is important to understand the basics of the securities regulations. By reading or listening to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you have learned about financial literacy, which is imperative for a successful investor. From reading or listening to Cash Flow Quadrant, you have learned about the four different quadrants and the ways people make money, as well as how the different tax laws affect the different quadrants. By just reading or listening to the first two books and possibly playing our cash flow game, you already know more about the fundamentals of investing than many people who actively invest. Once you understand the fundamentals of investing, you can better understand Rich Dad's categories of investors and the 10 investor controls he said were important to all investors. The 10 investor controls. The 10 investor controls are control over 1. Yourself, 2. Income, expense ratios, and asset liability ratios, 3. Management of the investment, 4. Taxes, 5. When you buy and when you sell, 6. Brokerage transactions, 7. ETC, entity, timing, and characteristics, 8. Terms and conditions of the agreements, 9. Access to information, 10. Giving it back, philanthropy, and redistribution of wealth. Rich Dad often said, investing is not risky. Not being in control is risky. Many people find investing risky because they are not in control of one or more of these 10 investor controls. This audiobook will not go into all of these controls. As you listen to this audiobook, however, you may gain some insights on how you can gain greater control as an investor, especially number 7, the control over entity, timing, and characteristics. This is where many investors lack control, need more control, or simply lack any basic understanding about investing. The first phase of this audiobook was dedicated to the most important investor control, control over yourself. If you are not mentally prepared and committed to becoming a successful investor, it may be better to turn your money over to a professional financial advisor trained to help you choose your investments. I was more than ready. At this point in my financial education, Rich Dad knew I had made the choice. I was mentally prepared to become an investor. I wanted to become a very successful investor. I knew I was mentally prepared and that I wanted to be rich. However, Rich Dad now asked me, "What kind of investor do you want to become?" "A rich investor," was my answer. This is when Rich Dad brought out his yellow pad again and wrote down the following categories of investors. 1. The accredited investor. 2. The qualified investor. 3. The sophisticated investor. 4. The inside investor. 5. The ultimate investor. "What is the difference?" I asked. Rich Dad added a description to each type of investor. 1. The accredited investor earns a lot of money and/or has a high net worth. 2. The qualified investor knows fundamental and technical investing. 3. The sophisticated investor understands investing and the law. 4. The inside investor creates the investment. 5. The ultimate investor becomes the selling shareholder. When I read the definition of the accredited investor, I felt pretty hopeless. I had no money and no job. Rich Dad saw my reaction, took the yellow pad back, and circled inside investor. Start as an insider. "This is where you'll start, Robert," Rich Dad said as he pointed to inside investor. "Even if you have very little money and very little experience, it is possible to start at the inside level of investing," Rich Dad continued. "You need to start small and keep learning. It does not take money to make money." At this point, he listed his 3 E's on the tablet. 1. Education. 2. Experience. 3. Excess cash. "Once you have all 3 E's, you will have become a successful investor," Rich Dad said. "You've done well with your financial education, but now you need the experience. When you have the right experience combined with good financial literacy, the excess cash will come. But you have inside investor listed 4th. How can I start as an inside investor?" I asked, still confused. Rich Dad wanted me to start as an insider because he wanted me to be a person who created assets that eventually bought other assets. Start by building a business. "I am going to teach you the fundamentals of building a successful business," Rich Dad continued. "If you can learn to build a successful B quadrant business, your business will generate excess cash. Then you can use the skills you learned becoming a successful B to analyze investments as an I." "It is like coming in through the back door, isn't it?" I asked. "Well, I would rather say it is the opportunity of a lifetime," Rich Dad replied. "Once you learn to make your first million, the next 10 are easy." "Okay, so how do I get started?" I asked impatiently. "First, let me tell you about the different categories of investors," Rich Dad answered, "so you can understand what I'm saying." Overview. You get to choose. In this phase of Rich Dad's Guide to Investing, I share Rich Dad's descriptions of each one of his categories of investors. The following mini chapters explain the distinctions, the advantages and disadvantages of each category, because the path I chose may not be the right path for you. The accredited investor. The accredited investor is someone with high income or high net worth. I knew I could not qualify as an accredited investor. A long-term investor who has chosen to invest for security and comfort may very well qualify as an accredited investor. There are many E's and S's who are very content with their financial position. They recognized early on the need to provide for their financial future through the I quadrant and adopted a plan for investing with their income earned as E's and S's. Their financial plans, whether to be secure or comfortable, have been met. In Cash Flow Quadrant, we discussed this two-legged approach to building financial security. I applaud these individuals for their foresight and discipline in developing a financial plan and providing for their financial future. For them, the path I took will sound like either an impossible mission or a lot of hard work. There are also many highly paid E's and S's who qualify as accredited investors based on their income alone. If you can qualify as an accredited investor, you will have access to investments that most people do not. To be successful in choosing your investments, however, you still need financial education. If you choose not to invest your time in your financial education, you should turn your money over to competent financial advisors who can assist you with your investment decisions. Reportedly, in America, less than 3% of the population meet the qualifications of an accredited investor. If this statistic is true, then there are even fewer people who will meet the requirements for the following levels of investors. This means there are many unqualified investors investing in high-risk speculative investments they should not be investing in. Again, the SEC definition of an accredited investor today is 1. $200,000 or more annual income for an individual. 2. $300,000 or more for a couple. Or 3. $1 million net worth. Realizing that there are so few people who qualify as accredited investors indicates to me that working hard for money is a very difficult way to qualify to invest in the investments of the rich. As I sit and ponder the idea of needing a $200,000 minimum income, I realize that my dad, the person I call my poor dad, would never have come close to qualifying, no matter how hard he worked and how many pay raises his government job provided. If you have played the Cash Flow 101 game, you may note that the fast track of the game is the track that represents where the accredited investor meets the minimum requirements. Technically, less than 3% of the U.S. population meets the requirements to invest in the investments found on the game's fast track. That means more than 97% of the population invests in the rat race. The qualified investor. The qualified investor understands how to analyze publicly traded stock. This investor would be considered an outside investor as opposed to an inside investor. Generally, qualified investors include stock traders and analysts. The sophisticated investor. The sophisticated investor typically has all three of Rich Dad's three E's. In addition, the sophisticated investor understands the world of investing. He or she utilizes the tax, corporate, and securities laws to maximize earnings and to protect the underlying capital. If you want to become a successful investor but do not wish to build your own business to do so, your goal should be to become a sophisticated investor. From the sophisticated investor on, these investors know that there are two sides of the coin. They know that on one side of the coin, the world is black and white. They also know that the other side of the coin is a world of different shades of gray. It is a world where you definitely do not want to do things on your own. On the black and white side of the coin, some investors can invest on their own. On the gray side of the coin, an investor must enter with their team. The inside investor. To build a successful business is the goal of the inside investor. The business may be a single piece of rental real estate or a multi-million dollar retail company. A successful B knows how to create and build assets. Rich Dad would say, the rich invent money. After you learn to make your first million, the next 10 will be easy. a successful bee will also learn the skills needed to analyze companies for investment from the outside. Therefore, a successful inside investor can learn to become a successful, sophisticated investor. The ultimate investor. To become the selling shareholder is the goal of the ultimate investor. The ultimate investor owns a successful business in which he or she sells ownership interest to the public. Hence, he or she is a selling shareholder. Which investor are you? The next few chapters will go into each type of investor in greater detail. After you have studied each type of investor, you may be better prepared to choose your own goal for investing. Chapter 22, The Accredited Investor. Who is an accredited investor? Most developed countries have laws written to protect the average person from bad and risky investments. The problem is that these very same laws can also prevent the masses from being able to invest in some of the best investments. In the United States, we have the Securities Act of 1933, the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, SEC regulations under these laws, and the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC. These laws and regulations were designed to protect the public from misrepresentations, manipulation, and other fraudulent practices in the buying and selling of securities. They limit certain investments only to accredited and sophisticated investors, as well as require detailed disclosure of such investments. The SEC was created to be the watchdog for compliance with the laws. In fulfilling its role as a watchdog over securities transactions, the SEC defined an accredited investor as a person who has earned at least $200,000 or more as an individual, or $300,000 as a couple, in each of the last 2 years, and who expects to earn the same amount in the current year. The individual or couple may also qualify with a net worth of at least $1 million. Rich Dad said, an accredited investor is simply a person who earns significantly more money than the average person. It does not necessarily mean the person is rich or knows anything about investing. The problem with this rule is that less than 3% of all Americans qualify as accredited investors who can invest in these stock issues regulated by the SEC. The other 97% are not allowed to invest in the same investments because they are not accredited investors. I remember when Rich Dad was offered an opportunity to invest in a company called Texas Instruments before it went public. Not having the time to look into the company and do his analysis, he turned the opportunity down, a decision he regretted for years. Yet he did not turn down other opportunities to invest in companies before they went public. He became even wealthier from those investments not available to the general public. Rich Dad qualified as an accredited investor. When I asked to invest in the next pre-public offering of a company, Rich Dad informed me that I was not rich enough or wise enough to invest with him. I still remember him saying, "Wait until you're rich, and the best investments will come to you first." The rich always get first pick of the best investments. In addition, the rich can buy at very low prices as well as in volume. That is one of the reasons why the rich get richer. My Rich Dad agreed with the SEC. He thought it a smart idea to protect the average investor from the risks of these types of investments, although he had made a lot of money investing as an accredited investor himself. However, Rich Dad cautioned me, even if you are an accredited investor, you still may not get the opportunity to invest in the best investments. To do that requires a completely different type of investor with the right knowledge and access to the information about new investment opportunities. The investor controls of the accredited investor. None. Rich Dad believed that an accredited investor without financial education had none of the 10 investor controls. The accredited investor might have a lot of money, but usually doesn't know what to do with it. The three E's possessed by the accredited investor. Excess cash, maybe. Rich Dad would clarify that, although you might qualify as an accredited investor, you still need the education and experience to progress to the level of qualified, sophisticated, inside, or ultimate investor. In fact, he knew many accredited investors who didn't actually have any excess cash. They met the income thresholds, but didn't know how to manage their cash very well. More thoughts on the accredited investor. Just about anyone can open a brokerage account to buy and sell stocks of companies that are considered public companies. The stock of a public company is traded freely as well as bought and sold by the public, usually through an exchange. The stock market is truly a free market in action. Without government or outside intervention, individuals can decide for themselves whether the price of a stock is fair or not. They can decide to buy it and therefore purchase an ownership interest in the company. One way to true wealth from securities comes from participating in the initial public offering, IPO, of a company's stock. Typically, the company's founders and initial investors already own blocks of stock. To attract additional funding, the company can offer an IPO. This is when the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, steps in with detailed filing and disclosure requirements in its attempt to prevent fraud and protect the investor from misrepresentation. This does not mean, however, that the SEC prevents IPOs from being poor deals. An IPO can be legal and still be a poor investment or an outright liability, meaning it goes down in value. The Securities Act of 1933 and the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 were adopted to regulate this type of investment and to protect the investor from fraudulent or high-risk investments as well as broker mismanagement. The SEC was formed to oversee the issuance of securities as well as the securities industry. The regulations for stock issues apply to public issues as well as certain private issues of stock. There are certain exemptions from the regulations that we have not covered. For now, it is important to understand the definition of accredited investor. The accredited investor may invest in certain types of securities that a non-accredited, non-sophisticated investor cannot, because the accredited status implies that the investor can withstand a higher level of monetary risk than the non-accredited investor. We've already discussed the accredited investor requirements of an individual or couple related to income or net worth. Any director, executive officer, or general partner of the issuer of the stock will also be considered an accredited investor, even if that person does not meet the income or net worth requirements. This will become a very important distinction when we discuss the inside investor. In fact, this is the path often taken by the inside and ultimate investor. Chapter 23, The Qualified Investor. Rich Dad defined the qualified investor as a person who has money as well as some knowledge about investing. A qualified investor is usually an accredited investor who has also invested in financial education. As it relates to the stock market, for example, qualified investors would include most professional stock traders. Through their education, they have learned and understand the difference between fundamental investing and technical investing. 1. Fundamental investing. Rich Dad said a fundamental investor reduces risk as he or she seeks value and growth by looking at the financials of the company. The most important consideration for selecting a good stock for investment is the future earnings potential of the company. A fundamental investor carefully reviews the financial statements of any company before investing in it. The fundamental investor also takes into account the outlook for the economy as a whole, as well as the specific industry in which the company is involved. The direction of interest rates is also a very important factor in fundamental analysis. 2. Technical investing. Rich Dad said, "A well-trained technical investor invests on the emotions of the market and invests with insurance from catastrophic loss. The most important consideration for selecting a good stock for investment is based on the supply and demand for the company's stock. The technical investor studies the patterns of the sales price of the company's stock. Will the supply of the shares of stock being offered for sale be sufficient based on the expected demand for those shares? The technical investor tends to buy on price and market sentiment, just like a shopper shops for sales and discounted items. In fact, many technical investors are like my Aunt Doris. Aunt Doris goes shopping for bargains and sales with her lady friends, buying items because they are cheap, marked down, or because her friends are buying them. Then she gets home, wonders why she bought the item, tries it on, and then takes it back for a refund so she can have money to go shopping again. The technical investor studies the pattern of the history of the company's stock price. A true technical investor is not concerned with the internal operations of a company as a fundamental investor would be. The primary indicators the technical investor is concerned with are the mood of the market and the price of the stock. One of the reasons so many people think the subject of investing is risky is that most people are operating as technical investors, but don't know the difference between a technical investor and a fundamental investor. The reason investing seems risky from the technical side is that stock prices fluctuate with market emotions. Here are just a few examples of things that can cause fluctuations in stock prices. One day, a stock is popular and in the news. The next day, it isn't. The company manipulates supply and demand by either splitting the stock, diluting the pool with additional shares created through such things as secondary offerings, or cutting back the number of shares or buying them back, or an institutional buyer, like a mutual fund or pension fund, buys or sells the shares of a certain company in such volume that it disturbs the market. Investing seems risky to the average investor because they lack the basic financial education skills to be a fundamental investor and do not have adequate technical investor skills. If they are not on the board of the company changing the supply side of the shares, they have no management control over the fluctuations of supply and demand of the stock's price on the open market. They remain at the whim of the market emotions. Many times, a fundamental investor will find an excellent company with great profits, but, for some reason, the technical investors will not be interested in it, so the price of the company's shares will not go up, even though it is a profitable, well-managed company. During the dot-com bubble, many people invested in IPOs of internet companies that had no sales or profits. That is a case of technical investors determining the value of a company's stock. In a bullish stock market, people who operate strictly as fundamental investors do not do as well as investors who also consider the technical side of the market. In a bullish market, people who take the most risk win, and people with more cautious and value-oriented views lose out. In fact, many of the risk-takers frighten many technical investors with their high prices of stock without any value. But in a crash, it is the investors with strong fundamental investments and technical trading skills who do well. The amateur speculators rushing into the market, as well as all the new startup IPOs flush with money, are hurt in a downturn. Rich Dad said, "The trouble with getting rich quickly without a parachute is that you fall farther and faster. Lots of easy money makes people think they are financial geniuses, when in fact they become financial fools." Rich Dad believed that both technical and fundamental skills were important to survive the ups and downs of the world of investing. Charles Dow of Dow Jones fame was a technical investor. That is why the Wall Street Journal, the paper he helped found, is primarily a paper written for technical investors and not necessarily for fundamental investors. The difference between the two investment styles is dramatic. The fundamental investor analyzes the company from its financial statements to assess the company's strength and potential for future success. In addition, the fundamental investor tracks the economy and the industry of the company. Warren Buffett has been acknowledged as one of the best fundamental investors. A technical investor invests from charts that track the price and volume trends and patterns of the company's stock. The technical investor may review the put-call ratio for the stock as well as the short positions taken in the stock. George Soros is often recognized as one of the best technical investors. While both types of investors invest from the facts, they find their facts from different sources of data. Also, both types of investors require different skills and a different vocabulary. The frightening thing is that most of today's investors are investing without either technical or fundamental investor skills. In fact, I'll bet most new investors today do not know the difference between a fundamental and technical investor. Rich Dad used to say, qualified investors need to be well-versed in both fundamental analysis as well as technical analysis. Kim and I want people to be able to learn to be financially literate and to teach their children to be financially literate at a young age, as Rich Dad taught me. I am often asked, why does a qualified investor need to understand both fundamental investing and technical investing? My answer is found in one word, confidence. Average investors feel that investing is risky because they are on the outside trying to look into the inside of the company or property they are investing in. If they do not know how to read financial statements, they are totally dependent on others' opinions. If only at a subconscious level, people know that insiders have better information and therefore lower risk. If people cannot read financial statements, their personal financial statements are often a mess. And as Rich Dad said, if a person's financial foundation is weak, his or her self-confidence is also weak. A friend of mine once said, the main reason people do not want to look at their personal financial statements is that they might find out they have financial cancer. The good news is that once they cure the financial disease, the rest of their lives also improves, and sometimes even their physical health too. Most people know how to make money only when the market is going up, and they live in terror of the market coming down. If a person understands technical investing, he or she has the skills to make money when the market goes down as well as when it goes up. The average investor without technical skills makes money only in a rising market, often losing all he or she has gained in a falling market. Rich Dad said, a technical investor invests with insurance from huge losses. The average investor is like a person flying a plane without a parachute. As Rich Dad often said about technical investors, the bull comes up by the stairs and the bear goes out the window. A bull market will rise slowly, but when it crashes, the market is like a bear going out the window. Technical investors are excited about market crashes because they position themselves to make money quickly when average investors are losing their money, money that often increased very slowly. So the chart of various investors and their returns often looks like this. Losing investor, up market, loses. Down market, loses. Average investor, up market, wins. Down market, loses. Qualified investor, up market, wins. Down market, wins. Many investors often lose because they wait too long to get into the market. they are so afraid of losing that they wait too long for proof that the market is going up. As soon as they enter, the market peaks and crashes, and they end up losing on the way down. Qualified investors are less concerned about the market going up or coming down. They enter confidently with a trading system for an uptrending market. When the market reverses, they will often change trading systems, exiting their previous trades and using short selling and put options to profit while the market comes down. Having multiple trading systems and strategies helps them have more confidence as investors. Why you may want to be a qualified investor. The average investor lives in fear of the market crashing or prices coming down. You can often hear them say, "What if I buy a stock and the price comes down?" Hence, many average investors fail to take advantage of profit opportunities in an upmarket and a down market. A qualified investor looks forward to the ups and downs of a market. When prices go up, they use the skills they've learned to minimize risk and earn a profit regardless of whether the price is going up or coming down. A qualified investor will often hedge their positions, which means they are protected if the price goes down suddenly or goes up suddenly. In other words, they have a good chance of making money in either direction while protecting themselves from losses. The problem with new investors. I often hear new investors say with confidence, "I don't have to worry about a market crash because this time things are different." Seasoned investors know that all markets go up and all markets come down. They know that when a bull market is hot, it more than likely will come crashing down at some point in time. And the higher the market rises, the faster and harder it crashes. When people are investing in companies without any profits, that means a mania is on. Sir Isaac Newton, who lost most of his fortune in the South Sea bubble, is quoted as saying, "I can calculate the motions of heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people." When there is madness and everyone is thinking about getting rich quick in the market, it's usually just a matter of time before many people lose everything because they invested in the market with borrowed money instead of first investing in their education and experience. When that happens,